First day of class, freshman in college, you walk in, your professor comes all the way to the front of the room, turns around, he addresses you, says, before the end of this particular semester, you will digest everything in your textbook, you will be tested on it, you are expected to know it. He then turns to his desk and he picks up a copy of the Bible. And he holds it up, and usually they'll pause just long enough to see if anybody in the room either smiles or kind of recognizes it, and then they'll continue with something like, yes, and anybody in this room that holds that this is the truth of mankind, you're going to fail my class. You need to get out now. And then they'll throw it in the garbage can. I had one student tell me one time, he said, my professor didn't just throw it in the garbage can, he actually lit it on fire before throwing it in the garbage can. Guys, I promise you, these kinds of tactics where they either try to intimidate you, maybe what they do is they say, everybody in this room that calls yourself a Christian, would you please stand up and move to the left side? And so all of a sudden there's a little bit of shuffling and your classmates are kind of looking at each other like, who's going to move? And you finally get a group over here. He says, I want everybody else who doesn't believe the Bible to move over to my right. And then you'll have a professor that addresses this group to the right, and he'll say something like, our job before the end of the semester is to make them join us. You will be attacked, I promise you that. It may not be at school, it may be at your job. Maybe you're working at a fast food restaurant, and you notice that your friend, your coworker is starting to skim money. And you look at them, and you know that the register has been a little bit short every single time that you work together. And you're afraid your boss is going to point you out about it. And your friend looks at you and says, you're not going to say anything, are you? You see, your faith is going to be tried. You're going to be put in positions where you've got to decide, am I going to stand or am I going to fall? And if you're sitting in this room and you think, he's not talking about me, let me show you an email that I got. From a guy I won't tell you his name. I'll say this. This guy lives pretty close to here. He sends me an email. He said, you said on the phone that I was struggling with some things. That's not entirely true. I'm actually in a term of acceptance. I'm confident that biblical inerrancy cannot be sustained. I make no pretensions about that. I'm interested in what you have to offer. I'll keep my ears open. He doesn't think the Bible is inspired by God anymore. Now, why is that a big deal? Why would I show you that? I would show you that because this guy went through Memphis School of Preaching and graduated and is now lost. I got another email from a young man by the name of Matt. He said, I'm a student at Tennessee Tech University, grew up at Hartsville Pike Church of Christ in Gallatin. I am taking world literature. Okay, stop right there, guys. If you think the only attacks coming after you are in a science class, wake up. This guy's in basically an English class. He said, the first day of class, my professor was talking about all the different things that we believe because other people have told us that they're true. He started out by asking, how many continents are there in the world today? The class answered 7. He proceeds to make fun of the education system because he says there's only 6, that Europe and Asia are 1. He then goes on. He said his next question dealt with the virgin birth. He proceeded to ramble on about original sin and that what all Christians believe is a lie. At the end of class, he says, we'll be talking about all the little piles of blank that you have in your head, and by thinking, we will hopefully rid you of them throughout the semester. What I want you to understand is that you're going into an arena. Earlier this summer, I had the opportunity to walk through a real Roman Colosseum, a place where, quite literally, Christians had been eaten by the dozens. It was a place where the Romans would come for entertainment, and part of their entertainment was watching people like you die in this ring. They showed us all of the different parts of it. You can still actually walk down this stairwell right here. And you can go into the bottom and you can see where they would hold prisoners, where they would hold Christians. You can see the places, for instance, where They kept the animals. They didn't just have one or two lions. They had multitudes because they always had to have some that were hungry. It did no good if that lion had just eaten a meal and you throw three or four more Christians out there in the arena. That lion's probably going to just lay there and bathe in the sun. What they needed hungry, angry lions that really wanted to go out and take care of the Christians. Every one of you, whether you go to college or not, every single one of you is going into this arena. I want to ask you, do you think you're ready? There's some of you that probably are. Some of you are properly trained. You've got the right weapons. You've got the whole armor of God. You are ready to stand in that arena. Even though you know the lions are coming, you're ready. Some of you, you're not. Some of you actually know that you think you're ready. You basically look at it this way. You believe, yeah, okay, maybe I'm ready, but your overconfidence is one of your greatest weaknesses. You're not ready. And in fact, this is a place where the lions are going to end up eating you up. There's some of you in this place that you know deep down in your heart of hearts, I ain't ready. And you've never told your parents. You've never told your parents that if you get put into that arena, you're not strong enough to defend your faith. Because after all, how do you tell your parents? How do you say, Mom, Dad, I don't know enough about Christianity to actually say anything? How are you going to come out of that arena? A friend of mine by the name of Jerry Bergman has written a book called The Slaughter of the Dissidents. Got a copy of it in my office. Jerry has done an interesting job of actually recording all of the attacks on students, professors, faculty members who are Christian in the academic system. So he has shown that people like you will occasionally get kicked out of a program because of your beliefs. You'll get a lower grade because of your beliefs. You'll get kicked out of school because of your beliefs. You won't get tenure because of your beliefs. You may lose your job because of your beliefs. In that, he gives this recommendation. The recommendation in there says, or talking about a guy named Tom. Jerry said he was talking about the fact that Tom had asked one of his professors for a recommendation. The recommendation ended up saying this. Certain of his religious beliefs may interfere with Tom's ability to objectively deal with certain academic subjects. In other words, this young student had asked one of his professors to give him a recommendation. The guy did. And without Tom realizing it, what he had done was he basically slashed him because of his religious beliefs. There's a professor at Texas Tech. His name is Michael Denny. You don't get into medical school, pharmacy school, dental school without this guy's letter of recommendation. He is the gatekeeper, so to speak. Now, the interesting thing about the gatekeeper is he will not sign a letter of recommendation unless you vow to believe in evolution. You see, it's his classroom. He's the king. So what do you do when you come up against that person? Guys, you need to understand you're going into an arena where the number of atheists is going to be probably higher than anywhere else in your life. Because when you get out in the quote-unquote real world, let's say you're working at a grocery store or at a fast food place. It's not a place that's known for a high number of atheists. You go off to college, and you are going to be inundated with it. And they view part of their job as basically teaching you their belief system. So here's what I want us to do. Before I let you guys eat anything, we're going to look at three things to keep in mind when you go into that Colosseum with an atheist. Three things basically that you can do. Number one, and this is the one sometimes we forget, you got to stay sharp yourself. You've got to protect your own faith. You've got to think about the fact that, yes, I'm in here with lions, and they want me. And this is not a place where I can just relax because there's going to be somebody coming after me. Number two, you've got to watch out for other people in the arena with you. Because you're going to watch some of your own friends go down. And you got to decide, do I want to help them in the arena? You see your friends struggling with their belief system. Are you going to be there to help them pull them up? Or are you just going to let the lions eat them? Last but not least, you got to consider the atheist. What about that professor? What about that teacher? Three things. We'll start with the first one. How do we stay sharp? How do we protect our own faith? Let me give you some practical advice right off the bat. Things that I think you guys need to know and that you can do. Number one, find a strong congregation nearby. Listen to me carefully, guys. I have done more research in this area than a lot of people. It's not what school you go to. It's whether or not you have a congregation nearby that will basically make you accountable. You don't show up on Sunday, you know what they're doing? Hey, are you sick? You okay? Everything good? They're checking on you because you're a part of their family. Number two, you got to prioritize your time. There are people that I'm looking at right now who you are going to know on that very first day of your physics class every single day that you have a test. They hand you a syllabus and they'll say October the 3rd, November the 5th, and you're going to know ahead of time. And there are people in this room that I'm talking to right now, and it's going to roll around, and you've got a test on Thursday, and even though you know you ought to go to Bible study Wednesday, guess what you're going to be doing? You're going to be studying for physics. Even though you know that's not nearly as important, you're not prioritizing your time right. You're going to know when your tests are. The question is, are you going to put him first or are you going to put your lessons first? You say, but Brad, I'm at college to get an education. Yeah, but you're in life to be a Christian. Amen. Number three, you got to make the time to engage in Bible study, spiritual conversations with your friends in school. Stay sharp. Some of the people that I admire the most, we do this on a regular basis. We will call each other with questions, just crazy questions out of the blue, just to keep each other sharp and to keep some dialogue going about biblical matters. If you don't do this, why would I say this? Number three, I would say this because if you're having biblical conversations with people, who have you probably surrounded yourself with? Probably pretty good people, right? If you're willing to talk Bible to them, they're probably not out smoking dope every weekend. And they're probably not sleeping with everybody they know. They're probably not drinking when they go home. They're probably pretty decent people. Number four, talk to your parents about spiritual questions and what you're learning. I recognize our society wants you to believe when you hit about 17, they want you to think your parents are the dumbest people in the world. That's what society wants you to believe. And then they want you to run off to college where you're in front of these guys with degrees after their name. And so the pull is for you to believe this guy and to think your parents are dumb. Well, guess what? Your parents have been there and got the T-shirt. And your parents care a lot more about your soul than that professor ever will. Pick up a phone, call them. Say, hey, Mom, Dad, I'm sitting here today in this biology class. My professor says that we came from Lucy, Cetopithecus afarensis. How do we know that's not true, Dad? Now, you may put him on the spot, but guess what? Between the two of you, you can find the answer. Last but not least, number five, have a go-to person. Why would I say that? You are going to be asked some things, either by fellow classmates or by professors that are really going to throw you for a loop. They're going to say questions that some of which you've never even thought about. You need to have somebody, whether it be your preacher, whether it be a special elder, an uncle, somebody who is knowledgeable within the church to go to and say, hey, they threw this at us today. I don't have a clue how to answer this. So that you know you've got somebody you can follow, a safety net, so to speak. Number six. Understand that many of the professors do not believe in God and they see it as their duty to expand your mind. Number seven, find out who the rabid professors are. You'll know. You're going to know very quickly, believe it or not. In fact, within the first 2 weeks of your class, your first 2 weeks of college, you know what you learn? I'll never forget learning this. Within the first 2 weeks of being on campus, everybody starts talking about who's the hardest teacher, who gives the hardest test, who gives the most homework. You'll learn all of that very quickly because you don't want to take that guy's class. You'll also learn which classes are early. Oh, man, that's an 8 o'clock class. You don't want that. You can also learn which professors are the most rabid. Go to the website. Look and see which ones sponsor atheist clubs or somebody tell me, what does GLBT stand for? Gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender clubs. They're on just about every campus these days. In fact, let me ask you, anybody have a club at your school right now? A couple of you? Last but not least, learn their arguments. Spend the time and the energy in order to find the answers to their arguments. You got to keep in the forefront of your mind, it's not all about school. I had a couple of guys who, when I went through medical school, a buddy of mine was in dental school. And he was studying, we were studying together, we'd go down into the gross anatomy lab and we'd study. And I can always remember, I would be getting ready. He was a member of the church. I would be getting ready to go. We would have a gospel meeting or something going on. And I said, hey, you want to ride? And he said, no, I got to study. And I remember that kept bothering me until the one day I finally just asked him. I said, don't you think that's kind of weak? And he looked at me and he said, you know, Brad, after I finish school, then I'll worry about those kinds of things. There's a couple of problems with that. Number one, what if he doesn't live long enough? But number two, what is he telling God's most important? The school. You got to stay sharp. Go to stuff like this. How many of you have an iPod? You know, you can get pretty cool sermons on iPods these days. And you're like, oh my word, sermons. Believe it or not, some of them are pretty good. And you can actually listen to them. And you can strengthen yourself. And your teacher says, there is no God. You know why there's no God? Because there's suffering in the world. And that afternoon, while you're taking a walk, you can actually be listening to a sermon on suffering to bolster your faith. You've got to stay sharp. We look at the master teacher. Luke chapter 2, verse 52. The Bible says, Jesus continued to grow in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and men. This is a man. He is our master teacher, the example. Somebody tell me about how old he was when he really started his ministry. He's about 30 years old. So from the time that he's 12, when he basically is lost in Jerusalem, until he's 30, what's he doing, according to the Bible? He's growing in wisdom and stature. If you are looking at me right now and you think, I know enough already, then you obviously don't understand what the pattern is. The pattern is we continue to grow. We learn. This is a guy who basically set the stage. So as you think about that, let me ask you guys. How many people in this room think you have a biblical worldview versus a secular worldview? Let me see. If you have a biblical worldview, let me see your hand. Some of you looking around going, am I supposed to? According to Barna, only 4% of people in the United States have one. I just saw about 99% of hands go up. Only 4% have a biblical worldview, meaning we look at things through the lens of the Bible. You say, okay, Brad, what does that mean? If you've got a biblical worldview, when it comes to truth, you understand truth comes from God, period. Not from a textbook, not from your mama. Sorry about your mama. Not from your granddad. Truth comes from God. When it comes to man, even though you see those Time magazine covers with alleged missing links, you understand we were created by God, made in His image. When it comes to ethics, if you have a true biblical worldview, it doesn't matter what your opinion is at all. It's what God deems as good. So when it comes to ethics, and you're sitting in a class and they start talking about abortion or euthanasia or stem cell research, it doesn't matter what you think. If you have a biblical worldview, It matters what God has said. When it comes to the universe, you understand that it was created by God to declare His glory, for signs, for seasons. And last but not least, wisdom, true wisdom, comes from who? From God. Guys, here's the problem. Listen to me carefully. For 18 years, your parents are trying to get this column into your head. Now, I'm going to be ugly and say that sometimes they don't try hard enough. They need to try more. But you run off to school and you're going to get a steady dose of this side. Where when it comes to truth, you're going to be told there is no such thing as truth. Absolute truth? No. You've got your truth, I've got mine. And if you don't believe I'm telling you the truth, guys, listen to me. About 2 years ago, I'm teaching a group of 11th graders. I casually referenced Abraham Lincoln. There's a guy sitting, and I won't forget it, three rows back. He looks up at me and he said, "We don't know Abraham Lincoln was real." Okay. Well, then, like other guys, George Washington, James Madison, I start rattling off people. This kid looks at me and he goes, "We don't know any of those people really existed." At which point, some of his classmates started echoing him, saying, yeah, we don't know any of those people were real. Guys, I kid you not, I'm standing in front of a class thinking, I've warped into the Twilight Zone. Okay? This kid, emboldened by his classmates, he puffs his chest out. He says, "We can't know anything for certain." Which is when I did something that would have gotten me kicked out of school if I was a real teacher. I just walked over and I pinched him as hard as I could. And when that kid went, "Ow!" I said, "Hey, how do you know for certain that hurt? If we can't know anything for certain, how do you know?" This kid had drunk all the Kool-Aid, man. He was completely gone. When it comes to man, you understand. If you have a secular worldview, you have this understanding that we evolved from some ape-like creature. Ethics, it's whatever basically you deem is good. Whatever's good for you. Whatever makes you feel good. Universe, if you've got a secular worldview, you believe that you came from that cosmic accident. And finally, you think that wisdom comes from men. Guys, here's the deal. Your parents are trying to give you this. You run off to school and you get this. And what I see a lot of you guys doing is basically you're trying to take a funnel and funneling God into that. And it don't work. Do not go off to school thinking, "Well, I can still believe in God, but I'm going to cling to everything else." Because if there is a God, there is truth. If there is a God, man's here for a purpose. If there is a God, then there is a right and a wrong for ethics. Take a look, Ephesians chapter 6. "Therefore take up the whole armor of God that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, having done all to stand." He says, stand therefore. You know, we look at the armor of God a lot. You guys have heard sermons on it a bunch. We don't ever look at the standing part. Look at how many times he says stand. "Having done all to stand." Stand therefore. I want every one of you for just a moment to picture yourself standing all by yourself, alone, in a classroom. Because that day may come where you realize everybody else has bought into some pagan idea and you're the only one and you're going to have to stand. That's what he's talking about. You've got to dig your heels in and realize, I am in an arena, but get this, you're not alone. Because who's with you? God is with you. When you think about preparing yourself for battle, Joseph's a great example. How was Joseph when we were introduced to him? Somebody said it. 17 years old. If you open your Bible to Genesis chapter 37. Take a look. Genesis 37 verse 2, this is the history of Jacob. Joseph being 17 years old, feeding the flock with his brothers. Now, give me some things that happened to Joseph pretty soon thereafter. What happened to him? Somebody said it.
Sold into slavery.
Sold into slavery. thrown into a pit by his brothers. He's hated by his brothers. He's thrown into this pit. They said, nah, let's make money from him. So they sell him into slavery. He goes to work for who? Potiphar. He is put over everything in Potiphar's house except who? His wife. What does his wife do? She tries to seduce him. Not just once, guys. Multiple occasions he's hit on. To one point where they realize they're the only people in the house. She hits on him. He takes off, leaving his cloak in her hand. And what does she use that garment for? Basically, to accuse him of what? Rape. And so he's thrown where? Into prison. Now, get this, guys. Here's what I need you to understand. By 17 years old, this man had faith strong enough that he was sold into slavery. He was seduced by women. He was put in jail falsely. And yet, did he ever give up on God? No. That's where you got to get yourselves. There are some of you in this room, I kid you not, there are some of you, you get a hangnail, you're going to give up on God. That's how shallow or weak your faith is. We got to get you to the point where anything can happen and you're not going to give up on Him. You think about temptations, staying sharp. This is going to be at college or when you move out of your parents' house, it's going to be the first time that all of a sudden you realize, hey, I'm on my own, and suddenly there's a whole new group of temptations. So what happens if it's not your professor, but what happens if it's your dorm mate who's got all kinds of bad movies? Or what happens if it's your dorm mate who's addicted to pornography? Or what happens if it's your best girlfriend over here and she and you are doing things that maybe young Christian ladies shouldn't be doing or dressing the way they shouldn't be dressing? And she says, no, you can wear my dress. It's okay. It starts out pretty simple. It starts out with a, hey, why don't you come join us? Let's watch this movie. And your mom has told you, since you were this big, Christians don't watch those kind of movies. We don't watch that kind of trash. And there's all the people getting together on your dorm hall and they're watching that movie. And you got to ask yourself, am I really, honestly, am I going to cash it all in? Because all of a sudden you find all kinds of temptations out there. You guys think you're going to be tempted to watch rated R movies or worse at college? You think you're going to have some video games that mom and dad wouldn't approve of in college? I can remember a guy who had a full ride to college. When I say full ride, you know what that means? He did not pay a dime his first year. He had textbooks, lodging, scholarships, boom. He didn't pay a dime. His first year, you know what he did? He made F's and D's. Guess what? He lost every bit of his funding. He went from having a full ride in college to basically about being kicked out of college. Alcohol, drugs, they're on every campus, Christian or not. Don't kid yourselves. Obviously, sex, whether or not you're pure, modesty, pornography. These are just some of the things where you're going to have to decide, am I going to stay sharp? Am I going to be in that arena understanding that there's lions around me, or am I just going to lay down and give up? Number two, you got to watch out for the people who are in the arena with you. The one may be overpowered by another. Two can withstand him. A threefold cord is not quickly broken. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 12. I would strongly encourage you to choose wisely who is in that arena with you. Paul's words are still very valid today. Do not be deceived. Evil company does what? Corrupts good habits. 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 33. Let me see a show of hands. How many people in here, over the course of your life, have been friends with somebody and you've watched them and now you know that they have strayed way far away? Not only are they not Christian, they are involved in stuff they shouldn't be involved in. How many of you? Okay, here's a question. Where would you be today if you'd hung right beside that person? Would you have been more influenced by them or them by you? You got to understand, If there's going to be people in the arena with you, you want people who will help you fight the lions, not people who are going to push you towards them. Or worse, stick a knife in your back. See, we don't just go to school to get an education. One of the things that infuriates Brad Harab, if you want to go home and tell your parents, man, he got crazy, tell them this. When I hear parents say, I hope my child stays faithful at college, that drives me crazy. Because that's setting the bar way down here. I don't want you just to stay faithful at college. I want you to convert somebody. I want you to evangelize. Because that's what we're supposed to do. That's taking it to a whole different level. It's not about, I hope you stay faithful. I expect that. That's like the bottom of the barrel. I want to see who you're going to bring to Christ while you're there. One of the worst things that you can do at school is to make your classmates believe that you bought into everything the professors say. Because if you don't question it, if you don't say something about it eventually, then basically all your classmates think what? Everybody believes that. Now, how do you do that? How do you influence people without sticking your neck on a chopping block? Because if your professor says, well, everybody believes X, Y, Z, you know, if you immediately just raise your hand and say, what about the Bible? There are going to be some classes where you may get shut down. You may have a professor, a rabid professor that doesn't want to hear that. But let me ask you this. Could you invite them over for a study session and tell your classmates, you know, he said this, I don't really buy that. I mean, think about it for just a minute. How many times can you influence your friends outside of class about what's being talked about in class? So just because a professor is trying to teach or promote atheism doesn't mean you can't affect those people around you in a positive way. Tell them, say, come on over to my dorm room. Come to my house. I want us to study. And while you're studying, if you're going through something, say, hey, you know what? They said this. Do you guys really think that that's for real? Because that's not what I think. That's not what I think the evidence shows. If I were to ask every single one of you this morning, how do you plan on converting people in the arena with you? What do you think? If you're looking at that question thinking, I don't have a clue, then you need to first ask yourself, am I ready for the arena? If you are sitting there going, I don't know how to convert nobody, isn't that what we take them to the preacher? If you're not sure how to talk to people about God and how to become a Christian, then are you really ready to stand by yourself in an arena with lions? You see, it's serious, and you got to get yourself there. So, number three, consider the atheist. This is the one sometimes that we forget to think about. That professor's got a soul too, doesn't he? Now, you may not convert your professor. There are a lot of professors you're not going to convert. But you can at least plant some seeds with them. You need to do it respectfully. You need to do it as a Christian and not be combative. Because in his classroom, guess what? He is the king. Like it or not. And if he's got tenure, the odds of you really causing him any problems is none. Because he will be there long after you're gone. So even if he's an atheist, even if he says very ugly things about Christianity, you still got to be respectful. You got to demonstrate an attitude of Christianity. Now, what kind of atheist is he? I told you guys, when you go off to school, most of your teachers are going to be atheists. Guess what? There's different kinds. You got some atheists who basically are rabid and they are trained. They know how to defend their beliefs. And here's the thing, guys. Listen to me. You think that you're going in this guy's class and you're going to sit there and everything's going to be good and you're going to convince him, not realizing he's had 8, 10, 15, 20 classes just like this before you ever got there. He is a seasoned person in the arena. He's ready. Then you also got the atheists who basically are like some of you. And they're basically brought up that way because that's what their parents were. You brought up a Christian because that's what your parents are. And you think about it for just a moment, all they're doing is just kind of recycling some of the things that maybe their parents have told them. These aren't rabid atheists at all. The rabid atheists, those are the ones who, if you choose to do battle, you got to understand, these are men who've been to battle for years, and they are ready. And that's why I'm trying to get you guys to understand, the arena is a very serious place. And if you're not ready for it, you need to let your mom and dad know. How do we fight them? How do we take on somebody like this? First thing you do is you find out what kind of professor you have. By asking a question like this. Excuse me, professor, could I ask a question about that? What have you done? You found out in a very respectful manner if that professor is even going to allow questions. If they shut you down and say, nope, see me after class, or I've got more stuff I need to cover, then guess what? You don't need to worry about that. In that classroom setting, it's not going to happen. But if they say something like, sure, what have you got? Then you can actually ask them a question. A pertinent question. A question maybe that you've already had kind of stocked and relied. Let me give you two examples. Young lady named Chelsea walked into philosophy class the very first day. The professor announced he was an atheist. He was not interested in any theological discussion. You got to give the guy credit. He is letting you know ahead of time, in my class, we will not be talking about God. Okay, so he has set the borders, the parameters. Now, that doesn't mean you can't go to him after class in his office and say, hey, I respect your comments in class. Are you open to maybe emailing me, dialoguing a little bit, or could I ask you some questions off the record? You look at a situation like this, and to me, that's the best case scenario because you know right up front. It's the ones where you don't know right up front. 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 12. Yes, and all who desire to live godly in Christ Jesus will suffer persecution. John 15, chapter 15, starting in verse 18. If the world hates you, you know that it hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love its own. Yet because you are not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. Remember that the world is set, that I said to you, a servant is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they're going to persecute you. I called Dr. Jerry Bergman and I asked him the question. I said, going to be talking to some students. What would you say? Now, this is a guy who spends a lot of his life collecting data about discrimination against Christians, specifically in college. Here's what he said. He says, stay in the closet for as far as possible. What does he mean? He means basically, don't be one of those people that stick your head up every single time. Why? Because it's going to be ugly. Now, am I standing up here saying that you need to hide or not defend your faith? Absolutely not. But if you're wanting that degree, do you have to fight tooth and nail every single time that something's brought up? No. Instead, why don't you think about doing this? You take a test. And instead of compromising your beliefs, you simply say, the book says blah, blah, blah. Or the answer that you're looking for is blah, blah, blah. Is that fair? Yeah. You know what you've told them? You've told them, you got to give me credit for the right answer, but I ain't buying it. I don't believe it. So let's say that you've got one of those professors that actually will allow questions. Here's what we do. We very courteously take the offensive. And you have already prepared some questions. Professor, excuse me, could I ask a question about that? How does something come from nothing? Excuse me, Professor, if you don't mind, you just mentioned this. Could I ask a question? Sure. Okay, how does inorganic material produce organic material? You know, Professor, you just said that evolution is a fact. How do we get rational from irrational? Those are the kinds of things where if you're going to go to battle, you need to be prepared. You need to have it ready. Always remember, faith and reason go hand in hand. However, human reasoning is fallible. Highly intelligent people can make reasoning mistakes. If you ever are sitting in a classroom and you hear somebody basically say something that is against the Bible, you need to understand it's not the Bible that's wrong. It's that person and their statement that's wrong. So let's get back to our thing. I said that some of you guys are ready for the arena, right? Some of you aren't. What are our options? I view my goal with my kids. I got four kids. I view my goal with my children by the age of 17 to get them to the point where they can go to any school they want to go to in the world and get an education. If that's what they choose to do. If they want to be a garbage collector, you know what? As long as they're a Christian garbage collector, that's cool. But if they tell me, you know what, Dad, I want to be an engineer. I want to be a lawyer. Now, if they said politician, I'd really have to say, I'm sorry, that's not. If they said they wanted to be something like an engineer, you know what I would say? I would say, let's sit down together. Let's find the best engineering school that you can go to that's got a strong congregation nearby. And we pick one. But let's say that my kid, I haven't done my homework, and they hit 17, and the time has come. And they're not really ready. What do we do? What about a community college nearby? What's wrong with that? One that allows them to go to college and start expanding their, spreading their wings out, but also kind of keeps them close enough that if they start to struggle or something comes up, that I'm right there and I can help them through it. By the way, community college costs more or less than state schools. A whole lot less. Is that a good thing? Interestingly, here's one for you to think about. Community college costs more or less than a Christian college. A whole lot less. Are you safe at a Christian college?
No.
And one of the worst things you can do is head off to a quote-unquote Christian school and think everything's going to be okay, because guess what? There's some professors there that will mess with your mind. I'm dealing with one right now in the state of Arkansas. He and I are studying because he has filled several generations of students with the idea that basically the first 11 chapters of Genesis, it's metaphorical. Didn't really happen. And so when I asked the guy, why then would we need a redeemer? You know what his answer was? I haven't really thought about that. Okay, so you've been teaching classroom full of kids that the first part of this book isn't true, and you haven't thought about the scheme of redemption? And what's sad is, parents are paying for it. Okay, so one possibility is we go somewhere close by. What if you're in this category right here or somewhere between these two? Let's say that I'm looking at you right now and your faith is very shallow. You don't know much. What is a better option for you if you want to do some higher education? Should you just go on to college? Knowing you're going to be one of those 85 to 88%? What do you think? Somebody tell me a possibility. Oh, you guys know other possibilities. What about this one right here? Can you do online schooling? Why would that benefit somebody who's not grounded in the faith? Why is that a good possibility? What do you think?
Somebody?
You can choose your curriculum very easy. What else? Go at your own pace.
No, it's interacting with those professors.
Okay, you're not sitting in a room with that rabid professor. Who are you probably living with at this point? I know some of y'all are like, oh, are you kidding me? Guess what? Your parents' job is to help get you to heaven. If you're not ready, this may be a perfect opportunity. What you got to do is you got to learn kind of where you are so that when you hit 17, 18 years of age and you know you're going into that arena, you got to be honest with yourself and say, okay, I'm ready for the Lions, or maybe I need some help with the Lions, or mom and dad, whatever you do, do not put me in that arena yet. Give me a year or two. Let me get to the point where I've got a chance. I know I've got to persevere and I want to do it, but I'm not there yet. Because every single one of you in this room, by the time you make that choice, you have already been taught some of this stuff. Some of you bought it. Some of you, in the back of your mind, you have so separated religion from schooling that you think, okay, everything that we hear at school is correct, and I think most of the stuff I hear in the pulpit is correct. Even though the two don't harmonize, you don't even think about it. Let me give you an example. Anybody seen pictures like this in the textbook? What's that teaching, ultimately? It's teaching evolution that modern horses came from this guy right here. Okay? Alright, if that's true, what's the Bible say all land-dwelling creatures were created on? What day? Land-dwelling creatures created on day 6. What day was man created on? Okay. So think about this for just a minute. Does that mean man was hanging around back here with this little bitty thing? You guys have seen this in your textbooks, but have you thought about the fact that, number one, this goes against the Bible. Number two, this is stupid. And here's why I say it's stupid. They're acting like this little bitty creature used to live 60 million years ago, and through time, it's evolved into a modern horse. Okay, well, if we get bigger through time, why do we have any little creatures out there? Why do we have little mice? Or why aren't humans like 9 feet tall? And why aren't horses getting bigger? So I'll say again, this is stupid. Not only is it stupid, guys, I know some houses we don't say that word. It's totally fabricated. 100% made up out of nothing. Take a look. This guy is an evolutionist. Look at what he says. The family tree of the horse is beautiful and continuous only in the textbooks. He says, in the reality provided by the results of research, it's put together from 3 parts, of which only the last can be described as including horses. He said that back in 1954. And yet we're still putting it in your textbooks. George Gaylord Simpson put it beautifully. He said, the uniform continuous transformation of Hyracotherium, that little bitty creature over here, into Equus, the modern day horse, so dear to the hearts of generations of textbook writers, never happened in nature. And yet again, that's what they teach. How about this one? Anybody ever seen the word vestigial structures, or two words? It's another very common evolutionary icon. The idea is basically you've got stuff left over in your body from previous critters, evolutionary baggage. They would say vestigial structures are remnants of an organism's evolutionary past. So allegedly you've got things that you don't need. Like what? Like your little toe, like your tonsils, like your appendix. In 1931, they said we had 180 of these things in our bodies. That list is pretty much all gone away. But again, let's think about that for just a moment. You're sitting in a class, you're reading about vestigial organs. What is that saying about man being created by God? Didn't happen. Adam, was he created with intelligence or not? How do we know that? He was naming the animals before Eve was created, guys. He was communicating with God. That's not what you're told. You're told that we evolved up out of the trees, some monkey-like creature. Let me show you why this is rubbish. You look at a textbook all the way back when maybe your parents were in school, 1989. And it talks about these vestigial organs. And it mentions specifically, for instance, the appendix. Hanging right down here. You move forward in time just a little bit. 1994, they got a picture of it in this textbook. Little bitty worm looking little deal, and it really does look like one, about that long. And they compare it to a horse. And they basically say, look, in the human, it's shrunk up. We don't need it. It's just evolutionary baggage. That was 1994. 1998, Royer's Encyclopedia finally makes this admission. They said, long regarded as a vestigial organ with no function in the human body, the appendix is now thought to be one of the sites where immune responses are initiated. Its removal also increases a person's susceptibility to leukemia, Hodgkin's disease, cancer of the colon, cancer of the ovaries. Oh, you mean it's got a function? Yep. In fact, when I was a kid, you get strep throat 3 or 4 times in a row. Guess what they did? They took out your tonsils. They're not as quick to do that anymore. You know why? Because we know that's one of the primary sites for immune function in the pharynx. No, they will eventually take them out if you have it over and over and over and over. But they're going to leave them as long as they can because they know there's a function for that tissue now. Here's my point. If you buy into this stuff, at some point in your walk, you got to decide, where am I going to place my allegiance? Because you can't harmonize that with the Bible. So some night when you're 19, 18 years of age, you're sitting in your college dorm room and you're thinking about all of this stuff, the day is going to come, that day of reckoning, when you got to decide, am I going to put my allegiance in what the textbooks and my professors say, or am I going to put my allegiance in what the Bible says? And there's some of you in this room that you know a whole lot more about algebra and science than you do God's Word. And you're not ready for the arena. And it's coming. And you're going to be put there with the lions. And the question is, what are you going to do today, tomorrow, the next week, the next year, to make sure you're ready for that fight? Thank you guys for your attention.